Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and I'm happy to say today that I have on the program Jason Isabel from the Missouri Department of Conservation. And Jason is the Survey Program Supervisor for MDC. Jason, it's good to have you on the program.
Yeah, I'm happy to be on the program, Bill. Thanks for the invite.
Oh, you bet. Glad to have you and excited about things that are coming up. You know, there's a little bit of chill in the air early in the morning, and I think fall is on its way.
Yeah, it sure is. Boy, it's been a little warmer lately, but a couple of weeks ago when we had those cool mornings, boy, it got me thinking about deer season for sure.
Oh, you and thousands more of us out here in the Missouri hinterland, so to speak. But Jason, I'd like to back up just a little bit, and we'll get into the gravy, meat and potatoes of deer season just a little bit later in the program. But, you know, some of us didn't do that well in college biology, you know, and it might be a good idea for you to explain what a cervid is. What's the definition of a cervid?
Yeah, so cervids are basically members of the deer family. So they're hoof ruminants that have antlers that they shed every year, at least the male segment of the population, other than in caribou. So we think about critters here in Missouri, like white-tailed deer and elk, but of course we go outside of our borders, you know, mule deer and moose and caribou. So all those critters would be in the family Cervidae, which is, again, basically what we call our deer family.
Exactly. So are deer the only cervids we have in Missouri then?
No, we've got a small elk population down in the southeastern part of the state that was reintroduced, been more than a decade ago. Hard to believe now, but yeah, so we've got a population down there of elk down around the Peck Ranch area, and great to have that native species back on the landscape, and there's lots of folks that enjoy going down there and getting to view the elk, and a few lucky individuals each year that actually get to go down there and hunt them.
That is an astounding program. Yeah, I forgot about that population. I've been down there many times, particularly at late August and September, trying to catch a bugle or two, you know. And I got real lucky one day and had a bull, heard him up in the woods just screaming, and some cows come running down out of the woods, and he come right out in an open field where I got some pretty good recordings. I was pretty proud of myself. And I felt very lucky and very fortunate to actually get that video laid down, and I actually made a little video that I posted up several times on social media, and everybody gets a real charge out of that. But I guess there's a little bit of a tourist industry that's developed down there around the elk. Good to see.
Yeah, there certainly has. And there's a driving route on Peck Ranch. And there's a lot of folks that enjoy going down there and getting to see them. And then, yeah, when the rut's on, it's fun to go down there and listen to them bugle. And it's, just a real treat to see that critter back in Missouri.
Oh, it really is. And of course, they're such a large animal. We don't have anything else in Missouri that rivals their size. And I get tickled at the guys that go out west and hunt elk and have been very successful. You know, they say it's just like hunting a big turkey. But a lot of them get pretty excited about that calling and communicating with the animal, you know. And of course, that's one of my favorite things about spring turkey season, and all other turkey hunters as well. We love to hear those things gobble. Same way with the elk. It's just incredible. Makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck when you hear one of those things bugle out in the wild like that. But you mentioned that there are a few lucky hunters every year that get drawn for those elk tags. And of course, I've applied every year that have been available. And I had a suggestion for MDC, and I don't think anybody took it to heart, you know. I told them, I'm so old, I don't know if I'm going to live long enough to actually ever draw an elk tag. They really ought to make that for just people 70 and over. But that didn't fly. But get this, I did draw a bear tag this year. So I'm extremely happy about that. I know it's
good for you, Bill.
Yeah, going to be a challenge ahead of me, but drew into zone three, and I got friends in that part of the world that own a couple thousand acres, and they occasionally get photos of bears on their farm. So I may have a decent chance of taking a bear this year. I've killed bears in Canada, but boy, would it ever be special to be able to actually take a bear in Missouri. Well, we're not really wanting to talk about bears today, but deer in the state of Missouri, we know how important they are to, golly, our way of life, important to the economy and all that sort of thing. But Jason, I'd again like to back up in history just a little bit. Can you give us a rundown of deer in Missouri? Well, I know that at one time they got down like 300 animals, and I think most of them around the Peck Ranch area. Been a long time ago, but after MDC come on the scene and some things begin to change, we got a little wiser about conservation. Things really began to change for us. Can you give us kind of a rundown of what has taken place over the decades?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, historically we had good deer numbers in Missouri, but like the story of a lot of other states after, you know, European settlement, there was, you know, unregulated harvest and folks were living in the rural landscape. The habitat was being degraded. And of course, at that time, folks thought that it was a resource that could never be overexploited, and found out very quickly that that was not the case. And it's, you know, you mentioned it, Bill, it's hard to imagine that, you know, you think back to, nearly about a century ago, the mid-1920s, we estimate there was about 400 deer in the entire state. That's mind-boggling to even imagine.
It is.
A state as big as Missouri being almost essentially completely devoid of deer. And so, they got to really low levels, you know. And then there was, you know, as we got into the 30s, the conservation movement really took hold in a lot of places in the country, Missouri included. And there was a lot of different steps that took place in order to restore the deer population. And a lot of that was, you know, a change in public attitude, you know, from folks that were, you know, not conservation was a really a budding field at that time. And so folks really had a shift in mindset from, you know, simply harvesting a deer at any time you wanted to recognizing that, goodness, they're almost gone. And if we don't do something about it, and if we don't start embracing conservation and protecting the young herd, then you know, they could be gone for good. And so there was lots of steps that took place. Obviously, the formation of the commission and the agency and getting paid, law enforcement officers that were out there enforcing the new regulations at those times that helped to protect the herd. Also some stalking that was going on brought in some deer from some other Midwestern states to help out. Another important part of that was having some refuges where we could, essentially protect the deer and allow them to expand in number and move them throughout the state. And so it was a slow process at first, but by the time we got into the 40s, just 20 years later, you know, we estimated that the herd had already grown to about 15,000 by then.
Wow.
And so still small compared to today's standards by and large, but a lot more than 400. And so that becomes, there's lots of critical points in time if we look at the history of our deer herd, but that was a big one because by the time we get to 1944, that was the first hunting season in modern time. So that was a real significant year, kind of a benchmark milestone year for the deer herd in Missouri, even though we didn't have very many, to give hunters that first opportunity in modern times to go out and enjoy deer hunting was really special.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a difficult question. Do you recall how many people participated in that first year's hunt?
I don't, Bill. No, I'd have to dig into that. I don't, off the top of my head, don't know exactly how many folks we had participating in that initial hunt, but it was a limited hunt with not a lot of folks. Certainly not the 475,000 that we have today.
I just can't imagine the excitement. Of course, 1944, World War II was still going on. I think ended in 45, but after that point, and after all those soldiers came back home, I know that, you know, the outdoor business just started to blossom because they had experienced a lot of adventure during World War II, and so many of them kind of want to continue that adventure. So getting out into the woods, being able to deer hunt or rabbit hunt or whatever became pretty special. And I would just have to believe that those soldiers coming back from around the world had a great deal to do with our conservation movement as well. But from 1944 on, some other significant things happened. What would be, in your mind anyway, some of the more significant things that took place that brought us to where we are today?
Sure. Before we get into that, Bill, the beauty of technology these days and having information right at your fingertips, you'd ask me a question I didn't know the answer to, and I've got it for you already.
So, really? That's incredible.
7,557 permits sold that first year.
Well, that's pretty incredible.
And we shot 583 deer.
583. Boy, don't you know there was some bragging going on with those guys that took those deer.
Oh, my goodness.
Would you like to have all the stories? But, you know, it was once again the beginning of a tradition that's just grown to astronomical figures now in this day and time. But other significant dates or events that took place that brought us up to where we are today.
Sure, yeah. So we had that buck-only season back in 44, started archery season a couple years later than that. So had a firearms hunt and had an archery season. Big deal. By the time we get to 1959, we had the firearms season was open statewide. So that was another, you know, pretty significant year. And, you know, as we think about kind of the different phases that we have gone through in deer management, clearly that early phase was about population growth. So even after we started introducing opportunity to harvest antlers, deer, it was very conservative. We wanted that herd to grow. We wanted it to expand. And so deer management was deer management is never simple, but it was pretty simple back then in the sense that we just wanted to grow numbers. So we wanted to, the hunters to have a opportunity to shoot bucks. That was, you know, something that was pretty foolproof in terms of population growth, started introducing antlers harvest slowly. And, you know, as we went through those next few decades, it was, you know, there has been so many different changes to deer seasons and regulations through time. As you know, Bill, as that population grew and could withstand some more harvest, we added different seasons and changed the season lengths and added different methods and specialized seasons. And so, as I like to think about the history of deer management, it was, you know, all really about population growth until we got into about the 80s or so. And then that's really when we started to shift towards more stabilization. So we had pretty rapidly growing deer populations as we got into the 80s. We had expanded the number of deer that folks could harvest. We'd increased season length. And so that was a period of time where our efforts were largely focused on stabilizing deer numbers. So trying to have, and still our goal today, trying to have enough deer that the hunters are happy. They're able to go out and enjoy hunting, see deer, have good hunts, but not so many that we have an overabundant deer population that's causing browse lines and damage to habitat and impacting other species and eating corn and soybeans like deer do and causing lots of vehicle accidents, which they can't. There's a lot of deer in the landscape. So we've always tried to find that sweet spot between making sure we have enough deer to satisfy the folks that like to either watch them or hunt them, but not so many that they're causing lots of issues. And so, yeah, as we got into the 80s, you know, that we shifted, our focus shifted. And then we added, you know, in the next several decades, lots of different opportunities. So our first muzzleloader season was in the late 80s. Fast forward to the 90s, we added the antlerless portion. Fast forward to the next decade, We had our first youth season back in the early 2000s. Started the amp point restriction a few years later in 2004. And then, you know, I think if we think about the last 20 years or so, it's been interesting because we got to a point in the early 2000s where in a lot of northern Missouri counties, we'd actually, the population had actually increased to a level where we felt like we had too many deer on the landscape. And so if you think about it's, you know, a century is a long time. But if you think about, and it wasn't even quite a century, but if you think about going from the 1920s with 400 deer to the early 2000s where you have counties that had too many, it's almost hard to even imagine that. But that's the case we found ourselves in the early 2000s. And so we became pretty liberal in the early 2000s with firearms antlers permits and the antlers portion, really trying to bring those numbers down into at levels that we would call within social carrying capacity. And we were largely successful at doing that. And, you know, from then on have continued to explore some different types of opportunities based on what our hunters desire. And so we have the goal, of course, as I've mentioned, of maintaining our deer population within biological and social carrying capacity, but kind of the structure of our seasons and the type of hunting opportunities that we provide for hunters is really largely determined by the desires of our hunters. And we survey thousands of hunters every year. We ask them what they think about the deer population in terms of numbers. We ask them what they think of their various portions of deer season, how many hunting trips that they took. And then if we're thinking about some regulation changes in the future, we very often will ask them on those surveys ahead of time. So I mentioned that just to drive the point home that, you know, we really do listen to hunters. We do a lot of surveys and certainly appreciate everybody that provides us with input that helps us, you know, manage the herd and give folks the type of opportunities that they enjoy.
Well, man, what you've described is one of the greatest conservation success stories that our nation's ever seen. And, boy, applause to MDC and all the hard work, all the innovation. I can't imagine the thought processes, you know, that so many of the biologists go through to come up with, you know, the ideas, the management plans, the new regulations. It's almost like a growing organism. Things are changing all the time. And I'm sure you're right in the thick of it now. But, hey, let's take a short break here. And folks, don't go away. Jason's going to stick with us in the second half of the program. We're going to talk about the upcoming deer seasons, regulations, and as a finale, we're going to talk a little bit about CWD. We'll be right back.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey, this is John from CoAngler.com. Did you know that CoAngler.com is the newest online platform to connect anglers for fishing trips? You can create your free account, offer and request fishing trips, connect with anglers in your area, share some costs, share some knowledge, and share a great time in the outdoors. Whether you're fishing from a boat and you got an extra seat and want somebody to come with you, or you need some help shuttling those kayaks for your next float trip, CoAngler is a great way to connect with like-minded anglers in your area for a great time out on the water. So get on CoAngler.com and let's go fishing.
Hey there, listeners. At Conservation Federation of Missouri, we're more than just advocates for our environment. We're active in making a difference through hands-on programs that protect and preserve Missouri's natural resources. By becoming a member, you're supporting impactful initiatives like Share the Harvest, which provides venison to families in need, and Operation Game Thief, which helps combat poaching and protects our wildlife. You're also contributing to the RISPR grants, which fund local conservation projects across the state. Your membership makes these vital programs possible, ensuring that we continue to serve both our communities and our environment. Plus, as a member, you'll receive updates on these programs, invitations to exclusive events, and the opportunity to get involved in the work you care about most. Visit confedmo.org/join to learn more and to join us today. Together, we can support programs that protect Missouri's wildlife, waters, and way of life. Be a part of the Conservation Federation of Missouri, where action leads to conservation.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Hey everybody, this is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. Check out my buddy's podcast show, Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper and Hunter Hindman. You're really going to enjoy this week's show.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm Bill Cooper, and I hope you enjoyed that first segment. Jason Isabel, the MDC Server Program Supervisor, is on a program with us, and he gave us an excellent rundown in that first segment about deer history, you know, where we've come from and where we've arrived, and it's an astounding story. If you're not up on deer history, this will give you, that first segment will give you a kind of a bird's eye view of what took place. But of course, there's a lot more to the story, and you can dig in, do a little research on your own. Of course, the internet, boy, all the information out there is just incredible. But Jason, we mentioned at the beginning of that first segment, you know, there's a little chill in the air. I know the temperature, it's August, it's yo-yoing up and down, but I'm up before daylight every morning, and I walk out on the back porch and I listen to the world wake up, and I spend a little time in the garden, and I'm loving that cool chill. But every time I walk outdoors, I've got deer hunting on my mind. I'm getting ready. I've been working on bows and deer stands and food plots and all sorts of things. And you know what? There's tens of thousands of other guys and gals out there just like me that are getting cranked up and getting excited. So deer season, what's going to happen this year? Rub your crystal ball.
Yeah. So no, I think folks are in for a good deer season. We've been, you know, if you think about, you know, really the last 15 years or so, we had a real severe hemorrhagic disease outbreak in 2012 that really set us back throughout a lot of the state. And so that, I bring that up to just, because I think the last 15 years or so, 10 to 15 years are pretty significant in terms of the thinking about the changes in the deer population. And so, you know, we went from a point in time after that outbreak where numbers were, you know, below our goals in a lot of counties. And, you know, we became more conservative with regulations after that. And, you know, numbers have bounced back nicely. And, you know, most of the counties of the state, our deer hunters seem very satisfied with deer numbers. It's taken many decades for numbers to, in Southern Missouri in particular, to get up to levels where folks are generally satisfied. But the survey data that we have suggests that, you know, most of the hunters are satisfied with deer numbers just about everywhere in the state. We do have a handful of counties that are below objective, but hunters are generally satisfied, and I think folks will have a good season. Last year was a bit tricky for folks. Kind of had a little bit of a perfect storm of several different things kind of working together. Last year was the year on the calendar where the November portion slides a week back, so it was as early as it could have been in 2023, and then last year shifted back a week, so put it about a week past the peak of the rut. Whenever that happens, we tend to see lower harvest. The bucks just aren't moving as much. And then had a warm fall last year and what seemed to be just a bumper acorn crop in a lot of places in the state. So yeah. Hunters struggled more last year than they have in quite some time. But I think barring any sort of, you know, similar stellar acorn production, which I wouldn't expect, I think folks will have you know, as a whole, I think folks will have a better season, better success than last year.
Wow. Well, that kind of surprises me. Of course, I didn't talk to a lot of people about deer season last year, but I had an excellent season. Killed one small buck and a couple of doe. So I had plenty of venison to eat all winter. Tried a lot of new recipes, you know. I was pretty tickled. But, of course, I'm 76 years old now, 75 last fall, and I killed two big does in one afternoon. And that's kind of out in the boonies by myself, you know, on a farm, no help. And I didn't, time I got those deer taken care of, I wasn't sure that was the best thing to do. Having to handle those and field dress them, and happened to be kind of off down the side of a pasture hill, and it was wet and muddy, and I couldn't get my truck in there, and I had to drag both those deer about 150 yards each, and I got a real workout. It's a good thing I was in good shape as I was, or it might have been a bad deal. But boy, oh boy, did I have a good time. I killed those deer. And I bow hunted that same farm, and it was so warm. I was sitting in a blind sweating, you know, and I would actually have a deer come by at 25 or 30 yards, easy shot, and I'd literally look at my phone, and it'd be 87 degrees, and I don't think I want to kill the deer today, so I'd just watch them, you know. But
sure. What
an incredible, incredible good time, though. But any new regulations coming up for this year, the deer season?
Yeah, so this year, like each year, there's at least a handful. And one of the big ones this year is, you know, in previous years that folks were hunting in the CWD management zone, there was restrictions on carcass transportation throughout the state. And so we did away with those this year, and in their place, have established what we're calling carcass disposal regulations. And so what essentially means for folks is if folks harvest the deer anywhere in the state of Missouri, they'll have to telecheck their deer before it leaves the county of harvest or before 10 p.m. on the day of harvest, whichever comes first. So they'll have to telecheck the deer before they leave the county. And then any unused parts of their deer, they'll either have to put it in the trash that ends up in a landfill, or leave the remains on the property where the deer was harvested.
Okay.
So if they typically take it to a taxidermist, you know, of course they can do that. If they take it to a processor, go ahead and do that. But it really comes down to the folks that process their own deer.
Mm-hmm.
And what that regulation is designed to do is, you know, one of the ways CWD can be spread is if a hunter has a carcass of a positive deer, they transport it to a new location and then dump the remains out in the landscape. So by requiring hunters to dump those remains either in the trash that ends up in the landfill or leaving them at least on the property where the deer was harvested, it minimizes the chances of folks spreading the disease. So that is one of the new regs that's on the books this year. We also expanded the CWD management zones. So we added some more counties there, so folks should be aware of which counties those are, and that those are all listed in our fall deer and turkey booklet. And of course, any county that enters the management zones open during the CWD portion of firearms deer season. So folks will want to be aware of that. And then also as a result of some of those counties entering the zone, the antler point restriction in those counties that were entering the zone no longer applies to. And that's been the way we've approached the antler point restriction since the first time we've detected CWD. So that regulation, a lot of hunters really like the APR. Where it exists, but unfortunately it conflicts with our CWD management goal because it does have the potential to spread CWD. So as a way to minimize the impact of the disease, the APR gets rescinded in the management zone county. So that's another regulation change this year. And then we've got some changes to firearms antlers permits in just a handful of counties this year. And But one of the changes I wanted to mention too, in regard to our youth hunters, is we changed the early youth portion bag limit. So prior to this year, Bill, the early youth portion was the only portion of deer season that restricted hunters to just youth hunters, or any hunter really for that matter, to one deer. Mm-hmm. And so this year we removed that bag limit. So youth hunters during that early youth portion can harvest more than one deer. They still can only shoot, of course, one antler deer with their firearm during the entire deer season. So that did not change. But what it did is just standardize that early youth portion bag limit with the bag limits during the rest of the firearms portion. So that way there's no special bag limit for that season. So it just keeps things more simple, more streamlined, more similar across the portions. And then for those youth hunters that happen to harvest a deer during that weekend, it gives them a chance to keep hunting if they want to.
Hey, good regulation. And we all know we need those new hunters coming in. It's always a concern to agencies as well as those of us have been out there several decades. You know, we like to see these traditions continue. And I know a lot of states are actually losing hunters. Are we still holding our own, Jason, as far as hunter numbers or new recruits coming in? Are we still doing a pretty good job of that?
We've stabilized the last few years, but we are below our peak. So our peak year for hunters was just over a decade ago. We were right around 517,000 was the high water mark. That was in 2013. Last year, we were in the ballpark of 475. So certainly not the levels that we were at our peak. But what's been encouraging is that if we looked at the trend that we were seeing from 2013 to about 2020, 2021, it was declining, and the rate of decline was increasing every year. And then for the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years or so, it's flatlined. So it's been interesting to see. That's certainly a good thing. We definitely do not want to lose hunters, obviously. And so the fact that we've been able to stabilize our hunter numbers has certainly been encouraging. We still have a lot of deer hunters. We're typically in the top 10 states in the nation for the number of deer hunters that we have. So, as you know, our deer hunting culture here in Missouri is huge.
Oh, it really is. And I get tickled. I watch for it every year. I think some of the schools, particularly in southern Missouri, let out for deer season, you know. I think that's just wonderful. I grew up in Mississippi County in southeast Missouri, and, of course, I never saw a deer or wild turkey as a kid. I think I was almost 20 years old before I saw my first deer up in the hills. So it's just been like magic to me to see what's transpired in my lifetime, to see the deer and wild turkey populations come back. And I love both of them, you know, and I spend all the time I can out there. Well, Jason, in the last few minutes here, I know CWD is a very controversial topic, and I was up at the meeting in Jeff City recently. Driftwood Outdoors, MDC, National Deer Association, put on what I thought was a superb meeting and certainly answered some questions for me. But so much confusion out there, and all those social media gurus, you know, who like to throw out all kinds of information, a lot of it bad information. But it's always great to hear it from the horse's mouth, you know, the people who professional biologists are doing, I think, a super job. And it was wonderful. I forget the gentleman's name that came from Wisconsin, a private landowner who was quite a deer hunter, but told the story of what had happened in Wisconsin after they quit properly managing for CWD. And then I think he gave a figure like 48% of their population is now infected by that. But boy, I just don't know what questions to ask you about CWD, because I'm like a lot of people. I don't know that much about it. I read and I read and read, and sometimes it's hard to retain all that information. But what's going on in Missouri with CWD, and how is MDC managing for that?
Yeah, sure. So CWD is a 100% fatal deer disease. It's contagious. And, you know, we detected it back in 2012 in our wild deer herd. And it's a disease very different from what most hunters are accustomed to. You know, a lot of hunters are familiar with hemorrhagic disease, which is a virus that causes pretty rapid mortality in deer. And, you know, we can have a severe outbreak. We do have severe outbreaks periodically through time. CWD is a totally different disease. It's caused by a misfolded prion protein transmitted from deer to deer, and it can also be transmitted when a deer encounters the misfolded protein in the environment if it's shed by an infected deer. It's a significant threat to our whitetail population. We've been aggressively managing the disease since we first detected it in the wild herd back in 2012, and are really committed to doing everything that we can to maintain a healthy deer herd. And we know, Bill, from looking at what's happened in other states that haven't managed the disease or haven't been able to sustain management for one reason or another, the disease spreads quicker and infects a larger percentage of the population. And we know from some of the states that have had it for a long time and from some population modeling that once it reaches a high enough level in a population and enough individuals become infected, it can cause declines in the population and lead to a younger population that has fewer mature bucks and fewer does. And so we test a lot of deer every year to find the disease where it exists so that we can manage the disease with a goal of slowing the spread as much as we possibly can, trying to keep our deer population healthy and trying to have as few deer affected by the disease as possible, and certainly have been successful. If we look at, you know, a good example being up in north central Missouri where we first detected the disease, we've been doing some intensive management up there at a localized level for, 13 years now. And last year, we're still having less than 2% of the deer that are tested test positive up there. So, and other states have had different experiences in that time period where without that sustained management effort by then, typically we'd see CWD prevalence rates, it would be a lot higher than that. So, it's a disease that certainly, it continues to spread and infect a large enough percentage of our population, could have extremely significant impacts to our deer herd, and the hunting culture that we spoke about, and also to our economy. And so we're committed to doing everything that we can to work with hunters and landowners to manage the disease, to try to keep the percentage of the population that has the disease as low as we possibly can.
Well, this is quite an expensive adventure, too, and I understand that there are federal funds that come into Missouri to help with this process. And that's been one of the criticisms I've heard. Some people, oh, it's just a money grab, you know. And of course, I know that's not true. Anybody can get their hands on MDC budgets, you know, to see where money goes. And it's hard for me to understand why people don't do the research and find out the facts before they start talking things. But what's MDC doing as far as trying to, you know, explain this to the public? Because it's a complicated problem and lots of emotions involved and just a lot of rhetoric going on, and much of it's very wrong. So what's MDC doing to try to get the word out to the general public about CWD and what, what it can do to our deer population?
Yeah, so we've got a number of different ways that we communicate. We, of course, do statewide news releases. We've got a pretty comprehensive website, mdc.mo.gov/CWD. There's a lot of information there on the website. We've got podcasts that we do and videos that we shoot and post on the website and post on social media. So we try to approach it from a number of different outlets because we recognize that not everybody gets their information in the same way.
Right.
So we try to do a number of different outlets, but I would say certainly the amount of misinformation that's out there now is certainly increasing and has accelerated a lot, in the last even 3 to 6 months. And so we're trying to do everything we can to give hunters the right information so that they can understand the significance of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And then appreciate the significance that it is, and then also be educated on what they can do to help.
Well, great, so, great point. Education, and a lot of conversations I've had in the last month have been, I keep telling people, educate yourself, and I'm not a deer biologist, and most of our deer hunters are not deer biologists. We all have opinions, but when it comes down to serious management, I like to give credit where credit's due. MDC has brought the deer population from 400 up to how many was it now? Gosh, deer everywhere, but still yet people want to conjecture and come up with their own theories, and then they really begin to believe that and preach to other people, and they get their converts, but I think the best question we can ask, are you educating yourself? We still need to listen to our biologists. That's why we set up the Conservation Commission in 1936-37 there, because we wanted to take it out of the hands of politicians and whomever, you know, and put it in the hands of professional biologists. And that's where we've been for the decades, and that's why we've seen the successes that we have seen. So, hey, I'm a big believer we need to stick with MDC and with the biologist and wait through this problem, and hopefully we come up with a solution one of these days.
Yeah, and I just like to remind folks that, you know, we have in the best interest of our stakeholders and deer population, and
absolutely,
work really hard to have an abundant deer population out there, and trying to do everything we can to sustain that population through time. And see, with the threat that CWD poses, it's just we have to do everything we can to minimize those threats, to protect the herd and have a healthy herd.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was pretty tickled with the director up at the meeting in Jeff City, and he made the comment. He got talking about MDC employees and how dedicated they are, and I think that's something that we don't often think about, you know, because people, biologists, really are concerned about this problem. And I know they spend many hours beyond those office hours, you know, at home. How do you get away from a problem like this when it's serious and it's your livelihood, and you're dedicated to that process? People can, hey, we're human beings. We often get caught up in something like this, and particularly when you're working in that field, you can overdo it. So I think we need to cut MDC employees a little bit of slack, you know. They're often criticized because they got the best jobs in the world, you know. But
well, and one of the things I wanted to touch on, Bill, if we've got a second here. Just
absolutely.
I wanted to mention it, to address it, because you mentioned it, but the federal funding. So that's something that, yeah, I hear about a lot, and there's a lot of confusion about that. And, there's some information out there where folks are, suggesting that we are testing deer and managing it because of federal funding, and that is simply not true. And what people are getting confused with is Pittman-Robertson funds that have been given to state fish and wildlife agencies going back to the 1930s, long before CWD was even identified. And so those state agencies are getting the Pittman-Robertson funds, and then they determine with some sideboards what they can spend those monies on. So MDC has been getting those Pittman-Robertson funds, since the 1930s. We don't get any more because of CWD. The number of positive detections that we find does not get us any more funds. We get the set amount of money that comes in regardless of our CWD surveillance and management efforts. Our agency just simply chooses to use a portion of those funds that we get to reimburse us for some of the expenses that we have with CWD surveillance and management, but we don't profit from it. There's no more coming in than what would have come in the absence of CWD testing and CWD management. So just wanted to clear that up for folks, because I know that's something that folks are asking about, and so just wanted to set that straight.
You bet. Excellent, excellent point. Well, Jason, man, I appreciate so much you taking the time out of your day to talk to me for about 45 minutes here. Excellent information. I know there's more available, but once again, what's that website that people can go to check, information about CWD, hunting regulations, whatever?
They can go to mdc.mo.gov/CWD, and there's a lot of CWD information in there. And then they can browse the website and get our fall deer and turkey booklet and lots of other information.
Boy, great, great. Well, thank you so much, Jason, for being on the program. And folks, here at Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast and Properties, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your dreams as well. I'm Bill Cooper.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you, you could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome, mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.